So it's all stolen property. So she's giving back everything which belongs to Indra and the demigods. And she's giving it to Krishna. So basically everything in this world is stolen property. Right? Everything we own is stolen property. Right? Because what does everything belong to? Everything belongs to Krishna. So anything you are using, anything that's in your possession, it actually belongs to Krishna. In the Isha Upanishad, Krishna says you get a quota. A quota means like the father, Krishna is the father. So the father gives all the children a certain amount of property. And then that's in your care. It belongs to the father, but you look after it. And then you have to take care of it. So this is the position in the material world. That everything that we are taking care of actually belongs to Krishna. But under the false conception, or the bodily conception of life, we think that everything belongs to us. We think I am the controller and the enjoyer of the material energy. And we don't like to use it in Krishna's service. We try to enjoy separately. When you try to enjoy that which is not yours separately, then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you are stena. Stena means thief. Means you're a thief. Stena means you're using something which belongs to Krishna. Because you're trying to use it and enjoy it, then you're just like a thief. And a thief, eventually you will be punished. So here, this is the difference between Naraka, the son, and Aditi, the mother. She gives everything to Krishna. Bhumi, actually. Bhumi, the earth. The earth personified, she gives everything to Krishna. So there's the consciousness that we need to cultivate. Using everything in Krishna's sense. Any points?
Actually, Bhumi's wife of God.
Wife of Krishna? Yeah, in a sense. O king, after bowing down to him, and then standing with joined palms, the goddess, her mind filled with devotion, began to praise the Lord of the universe, whom the best of demigods worship. Goddess Bhumi said, obeisances unto you, O Lord of the chief demigods, O holder of the conch shell, disc, and club. O Supreme Soul within the heart, you assume your various forms to fulfill your devotees' desires. Obeisances unto you. So, it's an interesting situation which has taken place. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points this out. Krishna has just killed her son. So normally, if someone kills your child, you're not very happy. Mm-hmm. Just like if I get Brinda. And then? She's being very naughty. And then? So then, the parents won't be very happy. Because this is the child. But you see the exalted nature of Bhumi's consciousness. Because although the child has just been killed, her own son, but still she is offering everything to Krishna. It's a very exalted level of consciousness. She is thinking like that. And you see all through the Mahabharata and the other teachings, through the other shastras, you see like Draupadi. Draupadi lost
five children.
But it did not weaken her devotion to Krishna. Yeah? And it's easy to say these things, actually. It's easy to say, oh, yes. But no, actually, if you go through these things, right, and there have been devotees in ISKCON over the years who have lost children, and their faith has diminished in Krishna. It's a very powerful test. It's the most powerful test, probably, that you would go through. You lose a child, and still you're devoted to Krishna. It's not an easy thing to go through. We can always say, oh yes, you know, you still have to be devoted to it. But when you actually go through something like that, it's not so easy. But Bhumi, her son is just killed, and still she gives everything to Krishna. And that is the opposite. Now, Balma was a demon. He was a demoniac personality. Krishna does not look at the birth of the devotee. And we should also not look at the birth. Actually, this is an aparada. Haridas Thakur describes this in the Harinam Chintamani. He says that if you judge devotees by their birth, or even, he says, by what they did before they became a devotee. Like, I ate meat. You know, I ate meat, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, all those things we did before we became devotee of Krishna. But if you judge the person based on his previous life, means before he became a devotee, actually that's an aparad. You say, well, he used to do like that. He's not pure. And if you judge the devotee by the birth, oh, you know, he's born in this family or that family or like that, that's an aparad. That's an offense. Krishna does not see like that. Krishna accepted Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is the son of Hiranyakashipu. He's a demon. He's an asura. He's not a sura, he's an asura. But Krishna does not look at the birth. Krishna looks at the guna, means the qualities. He doesn't look at the birth of the person. He doesn't say, oh, well, they're born in this particular family. No, he says, what are their devotional qualities? And if they're devoted, then Krishna accepts. If not devoted, Krishna does not accept. So with this circumstance, he accepts the mother, even though the son is a demon. But then the mother shows a different type of mentality, immediately he accepts it. So that is the kind of Krishna sees like that. He doesn't see the externals, he sees the internal sincerity. If the devotee is sincere, Krishna accepts. If the devotee is not sincere, then Krishna does not accept. So we should also learn to be like that. If someone is sincere, we accept them, regardless of their position before being a devotee. Any points? I was with him. 5 minutes before he found out that I was with him. Very.
I didn't follow you.
One devotee in Brisbane lost the daughter, Saki Roy. He's very equipoised, very advanced devotee. Any other point?
Subhadra also lost her son.
Respond to that type of situation where
So what's the question in the context?
So the question is basically, so when they are acting prematurely, and we see that it's not the appropriate way to deal with situations.
Yeah.
Now, that person is a devotee. Are we to say, okay, it's a devotee that's...
No, because if he's equal, then you should say something. Just like if I see you do something silly, I'll say something, right? Right. But a more advanced devotee, or not even maybe more advanced, but more senior devotee does something, then maybe I can't say something. Because then it will become a problem.
Yes.
Yeah, if I go and say, hey, taboo, yeah, you actually can't, then it become a big problem. So sometimes we just pray to Krishna to take care of it. But if it's someone equal, you know, like Jagannath Brahma is doing something, you have to say something. You know, Prabhu, actually, it's not so appropriate. You eat so many gulabs when you come to the home programs. You preach like you're some big guy, but, you know, you don't really have sense control. And you should say something like that.
Can't say anything.
I know, I can't say anything. He's not here, so we can say what we want. No, but if someone is equal, you should say something. I always do. I always say something. My wife doesn't like it. But I always do it. And then what she does, sometimes she tells me. Someone says something to her, and then she tells me, and then I go to them. And then I say, hey, why did you say like that? Like that? And then she really doesn't like that. You know, so I said to her, don't tell me anything. Because that's what I'm like. I'll go and tell. Yeah, if so. No, but it's actually my service. It's actually my service. Because if someone is acting improperly or saying things improperly, and then they say something and she tells me, then I'm not going to sit by and like that. So I told her, I said, don't tell me. Because I'm not going to ignore these kind of circumstances. So we should say. So, any other points?
I think that in the case where you're talking to someone who's in the context of losing a child or something that bad, that difficult, I think you have to be very, very careful about what you say to that person. You can do a lot more harm than good if you chastise them at that time.
Yeah, you wouldn't chastise them at that time.
Or even say, you know, you're a devotee, don't act this way, act this way. Yeah, but I think you have to be really careful, because I've had that experience in my life where I was trying to help someone in that kind of situation, and anything you say at that time is magnified a thousandfold, because you might be meaning it in a nice manner to help them, but you have to really be careful how you say it, not have it at them, like directly.
Yeah. Anything else?
So in this example, the person also did it. There is something higher, actually. You know what? Losing our children is not a great thing. You know, many people, they can remain in the post. But when Arjuna brought Ashwadhamma, when he wanted to kill Krishna, said to Krishna, said, kill him. But Draupadi said, his mother, he talks about Ashwadhamma's mother, the pain that she has to go through like me.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is even higher.
Yeah, very exalted.
Someone is very, very okay to an extent, but being equiposed at that point of time, like not losing your mind or something, or out of anger.
Yeah, this is how exalted these personalities are. Draupadi and all of them. So, such exalted personalities.
I read many times about her, but every time I want to read about her, the example that she has set for me.
Any other points?
I was listening to a lecture of Devaki Mataji, and she was telling in a matter of glorifying the devotee, one should not exaggerate in a glorification as well. Because if you exaggerate in glorification, and if that devotee is not on that level, he might become very
is proud as well. So one should be very careful in glorification as well. So, you know, as you say, we have to correct in that sense. But yes, it is our duty as, you know, if our peers or our junior are doing something wrong, we should correct.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if some, you shouldn't over glorify people.
Yes.
Except for me, you can do it. I can handle it. Okay. But in general, don't do it. Okay. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as a lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses.
Wow.
Yeah, I did 25. I did 25 wrong.
Offered the same prayer which is found in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, text number 22. Synonyms and translation given here are taken from Srimad Prabhupada's rendering of that text. We may also note that although Kunti's prayer occurs early in the Bhagavatam, she offered it many years after the incident was practical.
Yeah. So, any points? So this is an extremely poetic verse. Krishna, in every line of the shloka, is compared to the lotus. It's very beautiful and very sweet. And as Balabhacharya famously sings, everything about Krishna is sweet. Yeah, he said everything is madhura. Madhura means sweet. And Krishna's conjugal pastimes are called Madhurya Ras, which means very sweet pastimes. So everything about Krishna is sweet. And he's compared to the lotus. Many parts of his body actually compared to the lotus flower. So what is significant about the lotus? The lotus is free from contact with the muddy water beneath it. It's almost like it's transcendental. And whenever water falls on it, the water just falls off. It has like a it's hydrophobic. It means whenever water comes, it just glides off. So Krishna is like that. Even though when he comes, appears to be in this material world, he's actually not in contact with the material world. That's why he's compared to a lotus on one level. He's like a lotus flower. And a lotus is also exceptionally beautiful. And you see them sometimes growing in ponds and so forth. They're very beautiful. So it is comparable to Krishna's beauty. So everything about Krishna is extremely sweet. We can meditate on every part of his form. As Balabhacharya says, he says, every part of his form is sweet. The way he walks is sweet. Everything about the way he speaks is sweet. The sound of his voice is sweet. Like every aspect of his personality. So we see from the very top of Krishna's form. When he's in Vrindavan, then what does he wear in his hair? Peacock feather. Why does he always wear a peacock feather? We never see Krishna without a peacock feather in his turban or in his hair. What is the peacock feather?
Peacock is one thing which is born without sex.
Without what?
There's no sex when it is born.
I haven't heard that, but could be.
I have heard
peacock
it.
Are brahmacharis.
They're brahmacharis?
It's a
hen catches the ears and she pick at the children.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't.
What kind of bird?
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but it's interesting.
It reminds of that when he won the dancing.
Yeah, it's a pastime. That's nice.
It's a marker, so he can be spotted
in
the crowd.
Yeah, it's a seal. A seal means, you know, when the king sends a letter, and then they melt the wax, and then he takes his ring and he presses into the wax. It's called a seal. Seal of approval. Stamp of approval. So it is his seal of excellence. Because it shows, the peacock feather shows, everything that he does is of the highest excellence. It's the most perfect. Because the peacock feather is extremely beautiful. And the colors of the peacock are extremely beautiful. When a peacock shows its tail, it's extremely attractive. There's also the pastime where Krishna is dancing with Radharani, and one of the peacocks is dancing nearby. And then Srimati Radharani said, the peacock dances more beautifully than you. And then Krishna says, no, I dance more beautifully. So Krishna gets up and he dances. And then peacock is dancing and he's bouncing. And then he says to Radharani, who is more beautiful? Who dances more beautifully? She said, the peacock. So then Krishna turns into a peacock. And then he dances the most beautifully. And then Radharani, so moved by Krishna's dancing as a peacock, she also turns into a peahen, and they dance together. And there are also pastimes when they're dancing together and many peacocks come and surround them and dance with them simultaneously. So there's many pastimes with Krishna and the peacock. So.
I remember also that there's a time
when
the peacock actually gives Krishna a feather.
I read somewhere that the peacock represents the eye of Radharani also.
Yeah, possible. So there's the peacock feather, and then his hair, what is his hair like?
Bluish.
Sometimes it has a bluish hue, sometimes it has a reddish hue. Huh? But his hair, how long is his hair? When he is young, Kaumara, it goes down to here. And when he is Pauganda, it goes down like to there. And when he is Kaishora, which is his eternal age, 16, goes down to the bottom of his back. And it says it looks like the feathers on the raven or the crow. If you look at the, it's like they're all layered on each other. So his hair is like that, very long and very shiny and beautiful. And it has like a tinge. Sometimes it's reddish or bluish. Then what are his eyes like?
Lotus
eyes, very beautiful. What color are his irises?
Red, pink.
No, his actual color of his eyes. No, the colorful part. We have a colorful part? Black is in the middle, that's the pupil. But then around the pupil is the iris. What color is that?
Red.
What color?
Red.
Red, not red. Who's got red eyes? Can you imagine someone's got red eyes?
Black eyes.
No, black wouldn't look good either.
Brown.
Yeah, dark brown. Dark brown. Radharani's are?
Blish.
Blue. Yes. I've told you this many times. Blue. Radharani's are like a very deep blue. Sometimes you see the Gujaratis. They're dark, but they have like the blue or green color eye. You know, Indian people, when they have the blue or green, are very attractive. So Radharani, she has bluish, dark bluish, because Krishna is bluish. So Krishna's eyes are like that. And it says that his eyes and also Radharani's eyes are very restless, always moving. They're always continuously moving. Both of them are very tricky. always walking around watching. So Radharani, her eyes, one quarter of her vision is looking for Krishna, one quarter is looking for her friends, one quarter is looking for her rivals, and one quarter is looking for her superiors. And that's why she's always moving her eyes. Always looking. So the eyes are very beautiful. And then Krishna's nose is like sesame flower. Very small, beautiful flower. Very beautiful, like Krishna's nose. And then his lips are the color of? Bimba fruit. What color is bimba fruit?
Reddish.
Yeah, reddish black. Red with a little like blackish hair. His lips are that color. And then his neck, three lines like the conch shell on his neck. His chest is very broad, and he wears the kostumbha mani and the moon locket. Right. Right. And then he's like Radharaman, you see the deity in Vrindavan. His waist is very slim. And describes many parts of his body are like lotuses. It says his fingernails and his toenails like pinkish. And the color of his palm is like a lotus, also reddish, pinkish. And then the soles of his feet like that. So everything about his form is very beautiful. Like the lotus flower. So, any points? Threefold bending, tree banga lalita. Yeah. Yeah. Folding in three places. Okay. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Lord Vasudev, Vishnu, the primeval person, the original seed. Obeisances unto you, the omniscient one. So it says that when Bhumi Devi is reciting this verse, she is thinking Krishna's sweetness is like an ocean. We should be like this when we go and see the deity. When you see the deity, you should not just take darshan very casually. Sometimes devotees that don't meditate on the deities very deeply. And we just see the deities, then we move to the next altar and then. But actually you should be drinking the form of the deity, just like you're drinking the water from the ocean, like an ocean of sweetness. And we should periodically, if not daily, we should spend long periods of time with the deities. Just meditating on them. It is a form of worship. To establish your relationship with the deities, you need to spend time with them and meditate upon them. So this is the meditation of Bhumi Devi. She thinks that Krishna is like an ocean of pleasure. Any points?
Just when you're doing deity worship.
Yeah. Just bathed the deities, and the deities are standing there cold and wet, and you do the massage at the feet at that time, maybe that's not the right time.
Yes.
Yes.
We have to be very.
Yeah, so if you massage, like, you know, Gauri Tayo here.
Yeah.
So, you know, many years ago, you know, I used to do the worship in the morning. So after Mangalati, then we undress the deities, a large Gauri Tayo.
Yes.
And then we massage them with the sandalwood pulp. What is it that they
At this point in time, when we bathe in the morning, Mangalarati, especially, I do Jyotish on Fridays, and apparently we bathe them with warm and hot water depending on the temperature outside from that. But we have a special spray which actually sort of brings the slayer out to it, also we massage with that too. But we wipe them and put it up on the magic.
Oh, they don't do anymore? Yeah, actually, come to think, it wasn't sandalwood pulp, it was tilak.
Okay.
It was actually ground tilak. It was a long time since I did it, but it was ground tilak. But obviously now it's deteriorating the deities, so they stopped doing that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure Gavacha probably said something. So. So yeah, but that's the point. The point is at that time when you're massaging the floor, then you can spend extra time in massage. So yeah, that's good. Anything else? Why can't we see the feet of Radharani?
At least in Gopas to be in many temples they show the feet.
Yeah, in Vrindavan they show the feet.
Even in Mayapur they show the feet. Yeah. But in our Radharani's feet I've never seen
them. I've seen because when we're on the altar then you get to see her feet. But
Gopas to be show.
In Melbourne?
No.
No, they don't do. So I don't know. It's a decision of the management.
We can see the feet because on that day Radharani wears the Gopa dress. That's why we can see the feet of Radharani. Otherwise, if she wears the skirt, we can't see.
Yeah, so in Melbourne they don't do. Yeah, possibly. Someone could do it. Or you get a petition, you get everyone in the congregation to sign, and then you give it to them. I won't sign it though, because we'll get in trouble. Oh, Krishna. Obeisance is unto you of unlimited energies, the unborn progenitor of this universe, the Absolute. O soul of the high and the low, O soul of the created elements, O all-pervading Supreme Soul, obeisances unto you. So Krishna is the source of all energies. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur points out in the purport, there are three principal energies, Antaranga Shakti, Bahiranga Shakti, and Tatashta Shakti. Antaranga means the external energy. Anta means like external. So Antaranga means this material world.
Internal.
Oh, sorry. Wrong one. I'll start again. Bahiranga. Yeah, sorry. Bahiranga means the external. Bahia. Yeah, Bahi means like external or facing away, means to turn away. So it means like the external energy. So this is the Bahiranga Shakti. This is the material world. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the Apara Prakriti, means the external, the inferior energy. That's this material world. So that's one of Krishna's energies. Then there is the Bahiranga. Sorry, getting it wrong today. Antaranga. Antaranga means the internal energy. Yeah. So it means the internal potency. It means the entire spiritual world, which is God's internal pleasure domain. That's where Krishna performs his lila eternally. So that place is made of Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. Everything is full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. In between are the jivas. The jivas can be in the spiritual world, the Antaranga Shakti or the Bahiranga Shakti. The spiritual energy or the material energy. Tatashta means like the beach. Have you You go down to the beach, sometimes the beach is covered by water, sometimes the water recedes. So the beach means margin between land and between water. So we are like that. Sometimes we're covered by Maya, sometimes Maya. So we're in between. So Krishna is the source of all energies. Any points? Tatashta. Tatashta Shakti. Any other point?
Can marginal potency become a or by practice?
Become what?
Marginal potency, like jiva.
Yeah.
Can attain the nityasiddha position or they remain marginal only, even though they
become? No, you're always marginal. But when you're in the spiritual world, then you're in your swarupa, your constitutional position. That's all.
So they attain, jiva attain the
nityasiddha
position?
Yeah, it could be nityasiddha. Nityasiddha means in the spiritual world. Nityasiddha means doesn't fall down.
So they can attain by
practice. Yeah, that's, otherwise what are we doing here? There's otherwise no use coming to the temple. If we can't become nityasiddha, I'll stop coming. Because what's the point? Or are we just going to come here, and then we don't become nityasiddha? What's the point?
So, sorry, I'm just trying to understand. So when we become nityasiddha, are we then part of the Lord's internal potency?
No, you're tatashta, which means you're marginal.
Marginal. But at the moment, we're not marginal. We're still...
No, you're marginal right now, but we're making the wrong choice. Which
so
is,
we never can be part of the spiritual...
No, it means... Marginal means it can be covered. So at the moment we're covered by the material energy. When we're pure, we're covered by the spiritual energy. But we always have a choice.
But someone like Radharani, she is the spiritual energy,
yeah.
Covered by it.
Yeah, they can't become covered by the external energy. We can. That's the difference. Any other point? Desiring to create, O unborn master, you increase and then assume the mode of passion. You do likewise with the mode of ignorance when you wish to annihilate the universe and with goodness when you wish to maintain it. Nonetheless, you remain uncovered by these modes. You are time, the pradhan, and the Purusha, the Lord of the universe. Yet, still you are separate and distinct. So basically in this verse it almost describes the entire material creation. What's the material creation consist of? Time, three modes of material nature, right? All the different elements which make up this material world. So all these things make up this material energy. And why does the material world exist? Because the conditioned souls want to enjoy separately from God. A simple example Prabhupada gives, just like you build a city, right? If we build a city from scratch, then you make a jail. And someone says, well, there's no prisoners yet. But you know there will be. So this material world is a durga. Durga means prison house. The material world is only for this purpose. It exists to rectify the conditioned souls. Reformatory center. So that we learn, once again, to serve Krishna. That's the whole point of this material world. It only has two points. Right? One is to purify the living entities. The other one is for devotees to preach. That's the only reason. Any points? This is illusion. that earth, water, fire, air, ether, sense objects, demigods, mind, the senses, false ego, and the total material energy exist independent of you. In fact, they are all within you, my Lord, who are one without a second. So that is Lord Chaitanya's explanation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam's philosophy, Lord Chaitanya explains it as achintya, beda, abeda, tattva. Achintya means
inconceivable,
means something that cannot happen. What's an example of something that cannot happen?
Time to be reversed,
yeah. But Krishna can reverse time. It's not possible to reverse time, but Krishna can do it. That's inconceivable. Or just like you take a seed, and in the seed there is a banyan tree. Just in one little seed. So the seed goes in the ground, and then a tree grows. And that tree can be 1 kilometer in diameter. Huge, huge, huge tree, just from one little seed. So this is inconceivable. But Krishna can do it. Krishna is the material energy. Everything comes from Krishna. But he is different from it. It's his energy, but he is different from it. Krishna is in every single atom of the material energy. But simultaneously, he is existing in Goloka Vrindavan. But that is inconceivable, how he can do one thing and another simultaneously. So all these things are called achintya. Beda, abeda. Beda means? Abeda means? Yeah, it means he's different but non-different. It is him but it is not him. Tattva, tattva means the truth. How can you be everything and simultaneously not be everything? Only God can do that. So Krishna is unlimitedly powerful. Any points? Here is the son of Bhaumasura, frightened. He is approaching your lotus feet. Since you remove the distress of all who seek refuge in you, please protect him. Place your lotus hands, which dispels all sins, upon his head. So we should also always be merciful to those who are innocent. You have to always look after the less advanced devotees. If someone is not as advanced as you in Krishna consciousness, you have to protect and look after them. That is Vatsalya Bhav. Vatsalya Bhav means the mood of a parent. We have to be, as a devotee, if you're a senior devotee, you have to feel like the younger devotees are like your younger brothers or younger sisters or children or like that. You have to look after them. That is the duty of the... So Krishna is very merciful. He kills Bhaumasura, but his son, he gives protection to him, because his son is innocent. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus, entreated by Goddess Bhumi in words of humble devotion, the Supreme Lord bestowed fearlessness upon her grandson, and then entered Bhaumasura's palace, which was filled with all manners of riches.
So he's a grandson of you.
Grandson of Bhumi. Yeah. Bhaumasura's. So, what does he give as the gift to the son?
Fearlessness.
What is the greatest gift we can receive? That's one of the greatest gifts you can have. You become fearless. Actually fearful. What is the most fearful thing in this material world?
Death.
death. If you become free of fear of death, that's like one of the greatest gifts that we can receive.
The Buddha.
Yeah, Prabhupada's name was Abhaya. Charanara. Vinda. Which means one who is fearless in Krishna's service. So when we become fearless of death, that is a gift which Krishna gives us when we become very devoted to him. So he gave this gift to him.
But then we have to become very detached.
Yeah, very detached. You have to become detached from your saris. And your jewelry. When you're happy just to wear a white sari. Or someone who's renounced. Yeah. But you don't wear colors because you're trying to please your husband. You wear colors because you're attached to them. This is the truth. You're not wearing the jewelry because you're trying to please your husband or Krishna, because you're attached to it. That is the truth. When you become detached, then you can go to Krishna. Okay. There, Lord Krishna saw 16,000 royal maidens whom Boma had taken by force from various kings. So now Krishna is about to marry the rest of his wives. In the last few chapters, we heard that Krishna married who? Anyone remember all the queens? Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Kalindi, Sacha, Padma. Is Padma one of the names?
Yes, it's the same.
No, Badri is. Badra, Mitravinda.
Nagnajiti,
very good. She's also called Sacha. So there's Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Kalindi, Mitravinda, Nagnajiti,
Badra,
and Sacha. One more. No, Sacha is Nagnajiti. There's one more. What's in my head just now? Starts with S. Nagnajiti, Badra, and... Yeah, it's...
Sudevi?
No, it's not Sudevi. Yeah, so there is... Lakshmana. Lakshmana. So eight. There are eight princesses. Krishna married the eight princesses. Right? And then, now he is marrying the other 16,100. So in the Bhagavatam, it says that he married each princess individually. However, in writings of the Acharyas, it is described he marries them all together. So it's described differently in different places. Because Rukmini finally gives permission. It's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but in other writings, it describes that Rukmini gives permission. And then, Krishna can marry everyone. You want to hear the story? How Satyabhama gives permission?
Rukmini or Satyabhama?
Sorry, Rukmini. Yeah. Gives permission. Do you want to hear?
Yes.
Okay. So it describes that Rukmini, Satyabhama, was given to Rukmini like as a gift, or given to Krishna when the jewel was delivered by Satyajit, Shalantaka jewel, and also they gave Satyabhama. But when Rukmini saw Satyabhama, because Rukmini is the most beautiful and she was the only queen of Krishna, Krishna was not there, but when she was delivered, the Shalantaka jewel was brought and Satyabhama was brought. Then when Rukmini saw Satyabhama, she thought, she is even more beautiful than me. I have to hide her from my husband. Otherwise, my husband would become more attached to Satchabhama than me. So Satchabhama, she actually said to Rukmini, she said, I do not, Rukmini said, you will have to stay in the palace as the servant of the king. The king is Krishna. But Satchabhama had not seen Krishna. She didn't realize. Because at this point in time, she's still in the consciousness that she's Radharani. She's gone to the planet of the sun god, been delivered to Satrajit, and then come into the Dwarka. So she doesn't realize that the king is Krishna. So he says, I don't want to have anything to do with any men. Meaning that she only wants to have relationship with Krishna. So then Rukmini said, oh, that's, she doesn't say it, but she thinks, oh, that's very good. She doesn't want to see any men. I will send her to Nava Vrindavan. Nava Vrindavan is a forest area in Dwarka where Krishna goes when he's feeling separation from Vrindavan. So she sends Satchabhama then. Satchabhama goes into the forest and lives there. So she doesn't have to see any men. And Rukmini thinks Krishna doesn't go there very much anymore, because when he goes there, he feels intense separation from Vrindavan. So he hardly goes there. So this is very good. She can stay there, he can stay with me. There is no problem. However, Krishna does go into the garden. And then when he sees her for the first time, he's completely struck. And then she sees him, and they think they're both dreaming, because they both in the consciousness of being Radha and Krishna. So then, Krishna keeps going to visit Satchabhama, because he says to Rukmini, oh, today I have to go and visit Lord Brahma. And she says, okay, go and visit Lord Brahma. I'll see you in the evening. So then he goes to go and see Satchabhama. He spends the whole day there, and then he comes back. So then Rukmini, one day, she goes into Nava Vrindavan, and Krishna is with Satchabhama. And then when she sees how happy Satchabhama is in Krishna's presence, and she becomes very upset. So she goes. So then she thinks, now I know Krishna is going all the time to meet her. How can I stop them from meeting? So she says to Satchabhama, you come and you be my maidservant. You stay with me all the time. So then I can watch you all the time, so Krishna doesn't sneak off with you. So Satchabhama comes and she's the maidservant of Rukmini. But then Krishna, he wants to associate with Satchabhama. So then one day he comes dressed as a girl, dressed up in a sari. And he says, I'm an old friend of Satchabhama's. Can I please have some time with her by myself? Rukmini says, very nice, go on. So they go off together, just Krishna and right? In the meantime, there's a parrot. And the parrot was hearing the conversation before Krishna came in. And Krishna was saying, I just want to meet Satchabhama. So then when Krishna goes off to be with Satchabhama, the parrot starts saying, I just want to be with Satchabhama. I just want to be like that. So then Rukmini realizes what Krishna has been saying. And then he runs in and realizes that the gopi is Krishna. So then she becomes very upset. And then she says, I will send Satchabhama to another kingdom. And then when Satchabhama hears that, she says, then I will give up my life. She walks out, she goes to Nava Vrindavan to drown herself once again in the waters of the Jamuna. So when Krishna hears that Satchabhama is gone to drown herself, he runs to the Nava Vrindavan and saves her before she drowns herself. So then Rukmini comes, and Rukmini, seeing how much love there is between Satchabhama and Krishna, She gets a realization that if I try to keep them apart, I'm not actually serving Krishna. So then she gives permission to Krishna. She says, my Lord, please marry her. And then they all realize who they are. She realizes she is Chandravali, Satchabhama, realizes she is Radharani, Krishna. And then at that time, Krishna has already discovered all of these princesses and the other six queens, and he has them hidden in caves, and then he brings them all, and then he has one big marriage, and he marries all of them together. So that is not in the Bhagavatam. That's a separate description. In the Bhagavatam, it says he marries one at a time. And now he's just
16,100.
He's just discovered the 16,100. Okay. So now I will read through. So are we on 33?
34.
The women became enchanted when they saw that most excellent of males enter. In their minds, they each accepted him who had been brought there by destiny as their chosen husband. With the thought, may providence grant that this man become my husband, each and every princess absorbed her heart in contemplation of Krishna. The Lord had the princesses arrayed in clean, spotless garments, and then sent them in palanquins to Dwarka, together with great treasures of chariots, horses, and other valuables. Lord Krishna also dispatched 64 swift white elephants, descendants of Airavata, who each sported 4 tusks. The Lord then went to the abode of Indra, the demigod's king, and gave Mother Aditi her earrings. There Indra and his wife worshipped Krishna and his beloved consort, Satyabhama. Then, at Satyabhama's behest, the Lord uprooted the heavenly Parijata tree and put it on the back of Garuda. After defeating Indra and all the other demigods, Krishna brought the Parijata to his capital. So, why did Krishna go and kill Balmasura? Because Indra asked him to. Indra said, go and kill him. So Krishna went, killed Balmasura, and then came and gave Indra the gifts, which Balmasura, and then he went to take the Parijata tree, and Indra said, no, you cannot take it. So,
arrogance.
Yeah, it means too much attached to rules and regulations. Sometimes we get more attached to the rules and the regulations than to serving Krishna. So actually, he should have said to Krishna, please take the tree. But he didn't. He said, no, you cannot take it. That only belongs in Swarga. It cannot go to earth. And Krishna said, well, you can try and stop me. So Indra fought with Krishna and Krishna defeated him. Once planted, the Parijata tree beautified the garden of Queen Satyabhama's palace. Bees follow the tree all the way from heaven, greedy for its fragrance and sweet sap. Even after Indra had bowed down to Lord Achyutya, touched his feet with the tips of his crown, and begged the Lord to fulfill his desire, that exalted demigod, having achieved his purpose, chose to fight with the Supreme Lord. What ignorance there is among the gods, to hell with their opulence. Then the imperishable Supreme Personality, assuming a separate form for each bride, duly married all the princesses simultaneously, each in her own palace. The Lord, performer of the inconceivable, constantly remained in each of his queen's palaces, which were unequaled and unexcelled by any other residence. There, though fully satisfied within himself, he enjoyed with his pleasing wives, and like an ordinary husband, He carried out his household duties. Thus those women obtained as their husband the husband of the goddess of fortune, although even great demigods like Brahma do not know how to approach him. With ever-increasing pleasure they experience loving attraction for him, exchange smiling glances with him, and reciprocated with him in ever-fresh intimacy, replete with joking and feminine shyness. Although the Supreme Lord's queens each had hundreds of maidservants, they chose to personally serve the Lord by approaching him humbly, offering him a seat, worshipping him with excellent paraphernalia, bathing and massaging his feet, giving him pan to chew, fanning him, anointing him with fragrant sandalwood paste, adorning him with flower garlands, dressing his hair, arranging his bed, bathing him, and presenting him with various gifts. So Bhakti, Jiva Goswami mentions this in the Bhakti Sandarbha. We have to worship the deity. If you have a deity, it's a weakening of your bhakti to get someone else to do the seva. Now, sometimes we say, oh, you know, you serve the deity. That. It's actually not because I don't have time to serve the deity, but my desire is not strong enough, and then I get someone else to do it in my place. So when you're very attached to the deity, you will serve the deity yourself. So you see here that the queens, they want to serve Krishna themselves. They don't want that the maidservants serve Krishna. They want to do the service because they have love and attachment for Krishna. Okay, so next week we will begin chapter 60, where Krishna teases Queen Rukmini. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gopriyamana.